2, our conversation tonight with Mr. John Bedini about the work of the incomparable genius Royal Raymond Rife. We've heard a lot in the first hour, including the efforts of Dr. Robert Strecker, a true hero of our times as well, as John and Bob tried to get the Rife Universal Virus Microscope Number 3 to function. It was a futile effort, unfortunately. Okay, John, pick up the story and let's go forward. And all of you, please do click on the link under John's name at rents.com and go to John's outstanding page on Royal Rife's work.
So anyway, what we started to do, Jeff, was we started to look at these. Let me just explain one thing. While this is all going on, John Crane is treating cancer patients
right
in the front office.
Wow.
And of course, Bob Strecker is going, John, you can't do that.
Not in my office, you can't.
Yeah, well, this was in my office.
I see.
And it was like John Crane's home away from home, all right?
Okay.
But
when you say he's treating them, folks, what John Crane is doing is running his little frequency generator,
yeah,
on people, having them put their feet on metal plates, I assume, and hold the stainless steel hand cylinders,
yes,
either or.
Yeah. That's right. That's correct, Jeff. You are absolutely correct when you say that. So we're trying to do this research work in the back, and we're trying to get John Crane not to treat people in the front office.
That's
right?
Pretty funny.
And we're trying to be as nice as possible because
right,
we're trying to discover exactly what it is, you know, that Rife was doing.
Sure.
And so we got him for a while to stop treating, you know, hopeless victims, and they were hopeless,
mm-hmm,
the ones that were coming in there.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you know, and this is a shame, because every one of those people that paid John Crane $500,
mm-hmm,
died,
mm-hmm,
along with my aunt. So
doesn't give the whole Rife legacy a real good ring, does it?
No, it doesn't give it a good ring when, mm-hmm, you have somebody that probably really didn't know how the items operated.
Right.
But who found a way to make a living,
mm-hmm,
after his drafting,
mm-hmm,
fell through. You follow me?
I sure do.
And of course, John Crane was not the type of person. I mean, he would go in the back, and you'd be working on an instrument, and I'm going to get into those instruments in a minute because I want people to understand exactly what we were working on and what we were trying to do. But he would actually take the instruments after Strecker and I would put one together, and then we would put the slides underneath the microscope, and then we would put this stuff, the bacteria and stuff, underneath the microscope. And, of course, we'd turn on the machine and we'd watch. I mean, Bob was very good at that. And he would actually go in the back when you weren't looking, and he would take a machine off the shelf and he'd sell it. He'd just plain sell it. And we'd say, John, you know, what did you need the money for? And this bill came due. Or I forgot to tell you that I owed this person this much money. Of course, that's not what he did with the money, but
what was he doing with the money?
Well, whatever John Crane was doing with the money, Jeff.
Okay.
Is a good question, because he always had some kind of dealings with shifty people.
Mm-hmm.
So whether he was into debt with somebody, I think it was going to loan sharks.
Was he playing the ponies and
I have no idea, but you know, I can find a lot of humor in this now.
Yeah. Well, back then it would have driven you up the wall.
Well, it did drive me up the wall, but you know, I was told to just, you know, cool it, don't go off the deep end, you know, cuz your equipment's starting to go missing, right? And you need this equipment to do your work, right?
Right, right, right.
And so we finally got him to stop, and he, you know, promised us that he would never do this again. and he would concentrate on what we were doing. So what we were doing was we were taking these square wave generators, and we were following some of Tom Bearden's work, which had to do with pumped wave mixing, and I'll explain that a little bit. A pump wave mix is a low frequency, something around, say, 1 or 2 hertz.
That's very low.
Yes, and sometimes 0.5.
No.
And this gates on the oscillator, and of course then you can mix the frequencies that you want to mix in here, and it will change frequency by using this pump wave. So we actually developed a machine, you know, that was quite detailed, and it was a mix of several different frequencies along with the pump wave. And we actually laid this machine underneath a microscope, and you could see these things. You could see these little paramecium. They would just fly apart. They would just, like, go.
I've seen that footage, or similar footage. Yeah, they would.
Yeah.
In other words, these are single-celled organisms,
right,
running all around, and when the frequency is turned on, they just would disintegrate. Just,
yep,
pop.
And it was pretty easy to do that.
Mm-hmm.
When you got into some of the E. coli, and you got into some of the strep,
mm-hmm,
and we even grew. Strecker used to. I had a partner that was in Africa a lot, and he used to bring these rhino horns back. And I said to Strecker one day, I said, let's just put this stuff in the water and let's see what grows out of this. Now, you really don't want to mess with that, Jeff, because there's a lot of things,
mm-hmm,
that could grow. You follow me?
Sure.
And so we did. And we got some funny-looking things underneath the microscope, which Bob looked for hours and hours at these things. And we were able to poof, and they were gone.
Were they on the scale of paramecium? Same kind?
Probably a little worse.
Same kind of critters, though, same size, basically.
Yeah, worms and things like that, you know.
Uh-huh.
Things that you could probably get by drinking the water there if it wasn't, unfiltered.
Yeah, I understand. We should also take just a moment or two and acknowledge another one of your colleagues, Tom Bearden.
Yes.
Who I did not know was involved with his early research with Crane and the virus.
Oh, yeah, there's a whole chapter dedicated to our work in AIDS Biological Warfare, one of his books.
Uh-huh.
And it's called Experimental Work. The chapter's called Experimental Work.
Tom, for those of you who don't know, Tom Bearden, again, one of the great, truly great minds of our time, a scientist, a man who has gone where few have ever even thought to go before, and has,
mm-hmm,
has been very brave about it, as have you, John Bedini. So I'm sure that we acknowledge Tom.
It's something that I have to do, Jeff.
Yeah.
You know, I just have to know. And I don't watch the news, first of all.
Me neither.
I don't watch any of this garbage that's on TV.
That's just mind control stuff.
Yeah, and I only got specific internet sites that I go to on things that I'm interested in. And so, therefore, the computer will stay off. So I'm not being bombarded 24 hours a day by all this media flash, which I don't think anybody gets any value out of anyway.
Nope.
And I more or less go into my deep realms of conscious thought, you know, with my circuits and things like that, because I get more pleasure out of that. And by the way, we worked, Strecker and I worked day in and day out, Saturdays and Sundays, probably for a good half a year, Jeff, on this, along with Tom Bearden. Tom Bearden was there, you know, a couple of times, a couple of visits, watching things underneath the microscope and actually, you know, hooking himself up to machines to feel what the pulse was and what this felt like and what that felt like. And, of course, Tom, you know, had great intuition
in
being able to tell. tell you if the thing was harmful or not. And this was one of the things that was very important in our research work, because it led us, you know, to more, to a better technical standpoint as far as the circuits went, because it wasn't a square wave and it wasn't a sine wave that was having, you know, making this thing happen. And so I'll get into a little bit about that machine in a minute and how that machine operated, because I think the audience needs to know that.
Very good. Okay. And the site that John Bedini has put together, excellent. And then, of course, the best Rife site is rife.org, loaded with information. Very important that you study up on this and understand what is being kept from all of us and how unnecessary most death, disease, and suffering is. Be right back. All right, we're right back with you and talking with John Bedini. All right, John, go ahead with the stories.
Okay, so
fascinating.
So, basically, Jeff, what this machine was what we call a pump wave mixer. In other words, where we could, say, take four or five different frequencies, say 50 hertz, say, you know, 500 hertz, say 1,000 hertz. Audio frequencies like Hoyland and Rife claim they were using, all right? And we would gate all these frequencies with a gate, in other words, with something that turned them on and off in the DC. We actually enfolded these waveforms into a DC potential. So that tells you right away that the machine was battery-driven. You follow me? It was not plugged into the wall.
Okay.
And what we wanted to do...
So it's running, in other words, because it's DC, it wasn't, just for you folks out there, it clearly was not plugged into the wall.
Mm-hmm.
Coming off a battery.
Correct. And what we wanted to do, Jeff, was we wanted to enfold this mix of frequencies into the DC potential. All right? And the DC, which is direct current, all right, was at a potential, say, a couple hundred milliamps at the max. Something that would not, you know, roll your eyes around if you touch the paddle. But what we wanted to see is if we could put the frequency into you and then measure it with a scope. And we were totally successful in doing this. And the cells in your body actually break this DC potential then apart, and the cells, the electrical impulses from the cell, mimic exactly the frequency on the scope. And so we knew then that this is what was killing these paramecium in there.
Okay.
See, because there wasn't enough current to even stun them. Like it was in microamps, like 2 microamps or something.
Now, some of you are saying, well, paramecium is huge compared to a bacteria and a virus, and that's true, but along here.
But what we were thinking, this is what we were thinking. We were thinking that if we could enfold these particular frequencies into some potential and then have the body cells translate it, we could open up these frequencies with something like a big bang, you follow me? To like rupture the virus or the bacteria. That's
right,
we were thinking.
A surge.
Yeah, exactly. And so this took a lot of engineering time to get the frequencies to enfold on the DC line, and we developed a special set of circuits that did this, that actually we called a modulator, a DC modulator, where we could modulate the DC and have it come out straight so that it was undetectable. All right, then when we applied this to you, you would see the sine waves and everything show up on the skin. anywhere you touched, you would see this show up.
Mm-hmm.
So this was successful because my aunt was diagnosed at the time.
And
I said to Strecker, I said, why don't we just give her this machine? And, of course, Bob Strecker, you know, was game for anything. And he says, fine, give it to her.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, and then she can dial whatever she wants to dial, and she could do it at home or do whatever. And she had a thyroid problem of some kind where the thyroid had died or something, and they weren't sure what it was. And of course, Aunt Dorothy is the type that, you know, if you tell her, here, just do this and do that, then she'll just do all the experiments on her own.
Mm-hmm.
And so we gave her the machine.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, this lump appeared, which was down by her thyroid.
Hmm.
And she went into the hospital to have it removed. Well, they still got the lump, Jeff, because they don't know what happened to it. They cannot figure it out to this day.
Hmm.
It was just like how whatever was wrong with her now is totally crystallized.
Mm-hmm.
And we just removed it, and they study it.
Hmm.
It's just you know, something that they removed, and of course...
So you're saying it accreted into a lump?
Yeah.
And then it was somehow...
Yeah, crystallized lump.
And that was it. Wow.
About the size of a... Maybe a little bit bigger than a pigeon egg.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, then they just cut it right out. But the pathologist said, geez, I've never seen anything like this. I've never seen anything so burnt in my whole life.
And this came right from her body like that?
Yeah, it came right from her body like that. And, and you know, it's well documented. I mean, Drucker knew about it. And, of course, he just sort of smiled and went off on his way. And he says, well, he said to me one day, he says, I think we're making some progress, he said, at learning what this thing is, because we're going to get into this in a minute, and it's going to get to where we can actually figure out what Rife did. And I know that this BCX machine and a couple others can do this.
Okay, very good. We've got a break coming up right now, John, so hold on, and let me just bring everyone up to date. We're talking with scientist John Bedini about the work of Royal Raymond Rife and how John and his associates, Dr. Robert Strecker and Tom Bearden, worked on the relics of Rife's wizardry and began to assemble their own approach, and how it is now understood pretty much exactly how Rife's genius worked. And it is something else, so stay tuned. All right, let's go ahead and see where this goes. Now, all of you, hopefully by now, have been able to get to Rents.com and have seen John Bedini's name in Guests and taken the link that is there, and you're on his page. If not, please do so, because we're going to start looking at some images.
Yes, we are. We're going to do that right this moment. So if we go to the top of the page, Jeff, you see four pictures that start out the page, and it says underneath them, interferometer mix before the transmitter.
Right.
Okay, this is an interferometer. which is a phase mixing interferometer.
Let's give a try at defining, if we can, in real simple, understandable terms, interferometer.
Okay.
It's a tough one, but...
let's go down to the center of the page.
All the way down to the center?
Yeah, and you'll see a simple interferometer.
There it
is. Black and white.
Almost halfway down, it's a drawing, and it says underneath it, a simple interferometer. Okay.
Right. Now, see, there's a source, and then there's two slits there. See it?
Yep.
And see what it's doing? The light goes through, and they interfere with each other. You see what's happening there?
Okay,
so
I see.
You get a bright spot, a dark spot, a bright spot, a dark spot. So
okay.
All these waves are intermixing, and like ones are canceling out and creating a dark spot.
I see. So as the light source from the left moves from left to right, what are the two vertical lines? What would those signify?
The two vertical lines?
Mm-hmm, those two.
Where it says S?
Yeah.
That's the source.
Okay.
That's the source wave. See it?
So the source wave itself is contained within those two vertical demarcations, and then it moves through what kind of an outlet?
Yeah, it's going through two phased outlets there.
Okay.
See?
All right.
So basically, when I say interferometer, what I want to do is an interferometer is the same thing that creates a laser hologram.
Hmm.
In other words, a picture in 3D.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, if we were using sound instead of light here, you would have a 3D sound. In other words, you would think it was 3D.
Mm-hmm.
All right?
Mm-hmm.
So how this is accomplished is if we go back up to the page, the very first set of pictures.
Go right up to the top, and those are what they look like. They're four monitors, if you will.
Yes.
And the top left picture looks like a
donut. Right.
All right.
So, what I've done here is I've taken one frequency and I've taken its phase,
mm-hmm.
and I've altered it, four or five different ways,
mm-hmm.
in this interferometer.
Mm-hmm.
And then I've taken another frequency and altered it four or five, and then I've mixed it together in what appears here as a donut.
Mm-hmm.
To show you that what the interferometer is capable of doing. Now, if we go to the next picture to the right,
okay, mixing two frequencies at one time.
Yeah, mixing two frequencies at one time. You can
mm-hmm.
see there's one fundamental frequency out there, but then there's this little frequency in the center, and you see it.
Yep.
It's like ringing inside there.
Mm-hmm.
So what we're able to do is we're able to take this thing, mix the frequencies in the correct phase,
mm-hmm.
and then send them to the Rife unit. So all our frequencies are already mixed. You see, now we add more frequencies and we go into this four-wave mixing. See?
Mm-hmm.
And you got a box that looks like a circle at the top and a circle at the side and a circle at the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
You follow me?
Mm-hmm.
So that's giving you an indication, and that mix there is probably real high in frequency because of the phasing on this. Now, if you move to the next picture, here's two fundamental frequencies inside each wave. So in other words, I've put the master frequency inside the carrier frequency. See, the carrier frequency is that big one on the outside.
Uh-huh.
And the frequency that I really want to focus on is on the inside.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then if I go down to the next picture,
mm-hmm.
you see, I added a pump wave signal to it, which is this DC pump wave.
Okay.
And I'm pumping this wave, which is, by the way, the same wave that is in the fourth picture that we just looked at.
Okay.
All right, and then if I go and I tell the interferometer, let's do a spatial dimension where I take the wave apart and I subtract, the right from the left frequency,
mm-hmm.
then I get this right here.
Mm-hmm.
I get this circle that I can expand and contract. All right? Then if I go down to the next picture, the interferometer to adjust 1.6 megahertz because that was one of Rife's frequencies for cancer, 1.6 megahertz. And what I'm telling the interferometer to do is to pump the crystal oscillator to go to move from 1.6 megahertz to 1.56120, because how do I know that 1.6 megahertz was exactly what he had?
Understand.
So I want the machine to cover a little range here, because suppose cancer isn't cancer. You follow me? Suppose that maybe cancer's just a little bit off today, or somehow it's genetically modified. So what I want to do is I want to be able to cover a range, and I want to be right on his frequency. I want this to return all the time to 1.6, but I want to be able to vary it. So let's go look at a pump wave. And we'll hit this first picture. It says the gate frequency of 0.1 hertz is triggered the interferometer to make changes in the frequency in the 1.604 megahertz wave. So what I've told the interferometer to do here is pump at 0.1 hertz, and when you click on this, it'll open up, and it should come up to your Microsoft player. So you just double-click that one, and it'll load up. And let's see if you get that.
Yeah, it's a QuickTime, and it shows...
And you watch the counter. You see it? You see it pumping there?
Yep.
And then look at the counter.
Oh, fascinating.
Yeah, so I'm scanning all the frequencies in that area at one time.
And what is the range again of the scan?
The scan is
1.6.
Yeah, I'm using I'm taking his cancer frequency. And I'm telling it to vary all over the bandwidth using this one frequency with this pump wave.
How far away from 1.6 megahertz does it go before it comes back?
Well, if you look at the counter there...
Tough to read, but...
Yeah, I know. It goes down, Jeff, to about 50 hertz.
Gee.
So it's moving all over.
It is indeed. All right, but very precisely so. And hold on, we'll pause and come right back. Good job. Okay, back with John Bedini, and learning all kinds of things. So we can see how that waveform covers a range and returns over and over and over again. It sweeps, but it always comes back to home. Okay, John.
All right, so here's the thinking here, that your body has certain frequencies that it is constantly emanating. In other words, the cells talk to each other. And so what I want to do is I want to be able to take this interferometer, and I want to be able to take the frequencies that the cells are talking at, and I want to put it into the interferometer, flip it around, and have it pump it back. You follow me?
Sure.
So I want to reverse whatever the cell's doing. And this is part of the, you know, Tom Bearden's theory of four-wave mixing in the Peori machine and the Rife machine. And so what I want to do is, what you have to be able to do is, since we don't know exactly, you know, what was in this Rife machine, I mean, nobody has been able to find a working machine that is a true Rife machine. You follow me? From the 30s.
Right.
And who we're talking about is, if we move down the pages a little bit, and we'll come across this first drawing, which is a block diagram of the interferometer oscillator. And this sort of is a block diagram so that you can understand that it's crystal controlled. In other words, I have set the frequency anywhere between 1 megahertz to 4.33 megahertz. Now, this is very important because this was in the original Rife machine, the 4.33 megahertz. So now I've got my 4.33 megahertz,
okay,
which is the carrier wave for the Rife tube. You follow me?
Okay, 4.33 megahertz was the carrier wave upon which and within which, I guess, other frequencies were embedded.
Yes, and now we're going to get into how that was embedded.
Okay.
All right. Now, see this, where it says, right, just follow the box down, and it says gated interferometer. Now, that's a gate. That's a DC gate that allows the frequency that you're putting into this to be pumped into this 4.33 megahertz. It's basically, you would term it, Jeff, a modulator. You follow me?
Gotcha.
But a DC modulator.
Mm-hmm.
And not so much where it's working like amplitude modulation on a radio station,
mm-hmm,
or FM modulation.
Right. And for any of you out there saying, what are they talking about? Just keep in mind that all this is on John's website, on the page for you. Don't worry about it. You're not going to be tested on this. What we're trying to do is explain to you how true scientific inquiry and brilliance cracked an incredible riddle and solved it.
Yeah, this is the only way you can do it, is by taking all the blocks and putting them together.
Right.
And so you can see down here, I've got in the next box, I say dual phase oscillator. So when I say dual phase, that means that this oscillator can do both phases, plus and minus. In other words, out of phase from each other, like 180 degrees out from each other, but in the same plane. You follow me?
Mm-hmm.
So that if I was to take this dual phase oscillator and couple this together, you would see nothing at its output. It would be hidden. So that's exactly what I'm saying there. And then I go over to a four-wave pump mixer, which is mixing four more waves with the dual phase. And then this then is amplified and goes into the gated interferometer. And then this frequency appears up here where it says antenna and ground. See, it's like you're sitting in between this,
mm-hmm,
two plates, in other words.
Okay.
Now, see this sense here? It says potential sense.
Mm-hmm.
That's an electrode that would be placed on you. So it's sensing the potential that you're already at, whether you're positive, you're mm-hmm negative. It's sensing all that.
That's on the block diagram of the interferometer oscillator.
Okay, so let's go down a little further.
Okay.
And then you run across another diagram.
Oh, I see. Special thanks to James Baer for the work he... And James has been on the program years
mm-hmm
ago. Another fine, fine mind.
Yeah. Right. Special thanks to him, because without James Baer, I don't think this whole routine would have started up again.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was a great guest. Superman. All right.
And then also special thanks is given to Tom Bearden for his insight into this scalar vector field.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, what we're making is a scalar field that we want to use the scalar field because it's at a zero. In other words, it's non-detectable, but it's detectable in the cell. That's what we're working towards here. All right, so we look at the next picture, and this is one of Tom's drawings. And it shows galloping velocity, harmonics, subharmonics, and wave pairs. That's from Whitaker.
Hmm.
And that's 1904, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, down underneath that is John Crane's generator that he used to sell.
Yeah, there it is. Right off the shelf, folks.
Yeah, right off the shelf. There it is.
Eventually, he put his own little nameplate on the front of it, as I remember.
Yes, he did.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, he did. And... Edison oil.
That's quite a picture.
That is the actual bio-ray machine.
That's Dr. Reif's ray machine, right?
Yes,
there.
It is. And that's Hoyland pointing at the tube.
Call it his beam ray machine.
Yeah, that's right. That's the beam ray machine. And see all those dials? See these dials on the front?
Uh-huh.
They're pretty clear in this picture, and I got this picture. I had this picture left from making prints when I worked with Crane. Because we reprinted all his pictures. See that little thing in the center above that center knob?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's a CNI tube. That's, I don't know if you've seen this on old radios. It's a green looking tube, and when you get the station, it opens up or it closes.
I see. I can look at it. I've got a magnifying glass. I can see it. So,
yeah.
Gotcha.
It's one of those indicator tubes that told the signal level. So,
wow.
So I think they were using this basically to get a tune on certain frequencies.
I see.
And, of course, then there's a milliamp meter.
So when it was solid, whatever it was, green,
yeah,
red, or whatever, then the frequency was achieved.
Right.
This is remarkable because this is in the early 30s. This is no computers, no... Remember, Reif did all this work in his lab with no computers,
right,
no television. He just, his mind.
Yeah, nobody to talk to at night.
No. Just
So then, of course, if you go down a little bit, then we'll come back to some of these things, because we want to get into the real important part about how these actually the potential in the machine actually explodes these things.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see John Crane sitting in the next two pictures. Here he's explaining Reif, but see the paper that he's holding there?
Right.
Dr. Strecker gave him this paper, and that's the AIDS virus right there.
That's Strecker's drawing of HIV?
No, that's Strecker got this paper.
Uh-huh.
From the university or something.
Uh-huh.
And they actually diagram the AIDS virus and see.
I've seen
why
that
Crane's
picture.
Holding that up.
Yeah, it's round as I remember it.
Yeah, it's right there. It's round. You can make it out a little bit there.
I had it on the cover of my book, come to think of it.
Yeah. And it was almost like a schematical drawing. Did you remember that?
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, there's John Crane in a silent moment. And then coming up.
He's thinking about all that money he owes.
John Crane had his good points, Jeff. You can see here, if you just go down a little bit, go down like halfway, or just a little bit before halfway.
Mm-hmm.
This was John Crane's diploma.
The trade certificate?
That's it.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly who he was.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a card
mm-hmm.
that was left over that we made a copy of. And that's what he gave us when he came to work for us.
Mm-hmm.
See, it says right there, John Crane Certificate, 1942.
How smart a man. Obviously, he was intelligent.
Oh, yeah.
Was he a Class A research scientist, a Class
No.
B research scientist, kind of a journeyman research scientist?
Well, he was more or less a C at that
mm-hmm.
and an A. At industrial drawing.
Got it.
And putting things together. I mean, you couldn't beat him. You know, when I don't care who you put on the drafting table, John Crane beat him.
Right.
You know, he'd work them to death. They just couldn't keep up with him. And this guy's 70-some years old.
Mm-hmm.
So John Crane could conceive things in his mind and put them right to paper. And then go build it. That's how incredible he was. But whether it worked or not, Jeff, was a different story, but you don't know until you do it.
Got it. Well, interesting stuff. Okay, coming back after the top of the hour break, our third hour with John Bedini tonight, he's going to explain how Reif's technology was able to destroy viruses and bacteria and other sub-microscopic organisms as we continue.